Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to Old Millennials, a deep dive on shallow topics from the late 90s and 2000s. I am one of your hosts, Margot Poupard.
And I'm your other host, Emily Bajan.
And welcome to a bonus episode. This was originally going to be on the Patreon, but we're not going to do that. This is too good to keep from the main feed. So we will be sharing it, bringing it to the people as it is meant to be brought in, especially in light of her birthday recently happening. And we're talking about Britney Spears and the Woman in Me today. I'm holding it up because I want to show Emily, even though we are recording in person, we were catching an echo on our mic, so we are technically separated right now, but in the same room.
Separate but together.
Separate but together. It's feeling kind of COVID, of which like I'm
so, it is.
I'm sorry to bring it up.
The irony is the last time we recorded together in person was pre-COVID. Like that is why we moved to this remote recording session.
Yeah, it's just really funny to hear you in my house and then also see you on a regular recording. But I'm holding up my book so you can see all of the tabs that I have in Britney's book that are the demarc where I have highlighted something insightful, something funny, something only Britney could have written. That's how much I took this book club episode seriously.
I appreciate that. I mean, a book club needs a good leader, and you certainly have lived up to that.
Well, I definitely didn't write any like formal questions. I was just going to go on vibes. But since Britney is also a Sagittarius, she would totally get it.
Of course.
Well, before we get into like specific stuff, what is your overall impression of The Woman in Me? Did it satisfy everything you wanted from this book? Because I know you and I, especially when it comes to celeb memoirs, the celeb war, you and I have read a lot of them, and I think, you know, maybe we can create the scale, like the Jessica Simpson scale of balance, I guess, of a good memoir, because we've read a couple, especially recently, I think, that we were both a little bit let down by. I know specifically for me, it was Paris Hilton. So on the Jessica Simpson scale of celeb memoir, how does Britney rank out of a, let's say, like a 1 out of 5 Jessica Simpson collection shoe?
I would say for me, this was like a 4 out of 5. I really enjoyed this. It was a bit short, but I am okay with that in many ways. For context, I listened to the audiobook narrated by Michelle Williams. And one, Michelle Williams did a great job. I'm glad they picked Michelle Williams. She was the right person to be the narrator in this sense, if it wasn't going to be Britney. But yeah, for me, I think I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really well written. I enjoyed the insight. I also enjoyed the conversational tone of it. Like, I think there's definitely a ghostwriter, and it's been talked about. And I forget what the ghostwriter's name is off the top of my head. But I appreciate that this was clearly written with Britney's voice still in it, because And you can read any Instagram caption of Britney's in the last 2 years. You will clearly see like this was written in Britney's tone, which I appreciate. How about you?
Just quickly looking up her ghostwriter, Sam Lansky. I couldn't remember his last name. And it was kind of, I had heard and like read around that it was like a team of ghostwriters too. Like he kind of like organized the book and got it into like a shape and into a timeline that could cover all of the things that Britney wanted to talk about, but also, you know, ground us in the process as well and like, you know, refine it. But I think there were like a team of ghostwriters that came in at different points. But there, like you said, there are distinctly parts of this book, especially a lot of the pages that I flagged are all passages that I feel like this is something only Britney could have written. I specifically am thinking of the way that she describes people who live in Los Angeles, because I was reading it on Muni on the way to meet up with friends. And I was so struck by what she said, and it stayed with me for so long. I made her read the passage at dinner because I really could not get over how funny it was the way that she described people in LA. She's like, in LA, there are no seasons. It's always sunny out and people are walking around in under a bright blue sky in their sunglasses, drinking cold drinks out of cups with straws. And I'm like, only Britney could describe people in LA in that specific of a way. And in that way, it is also, even though I gave it 5 stars on Goodreads, because for the most part, I always do, but I think it is a four and a half Jessica Simpson collection shoe out of 5. It like, it almost got there for me. Like there were parts that I just wanted more information on or more of a story on or more of a perspective on, but I do understand and appreciate that all of this stuff is like so new and happening to her in real time. So perhaps she doesn't have enough space for like deeper reflection at this point. And it is really short. But also when I bought Britney's book, I stopped and, you know, like picked up the tome that is Barbara Streisand's book. And like, you know,
I got that audiobook too. That's a 32-hour audiobook, Margot.
It's 48. And I read that the audiobook is really long because she goes on side tangents while reading her book. Because many people have like written that they didn't realize that some of the stuff that she had read in her audiobook wasn't the same as in her book until they said something to a person who had read her book. And they're like, what? And like, oh, that explains what she kept saying. Okay, now back to the story, because she just kept going like, oh, and then all this happened, and like Mandy Patinkin was a jerk to me, and oh, but anyway, back to the story I was telling you, like would just go on like little side quests all throughout, which I think is so incredible and is one of the times where I'm like, oh, this is definitely an audiobook over reading situation, because it's going to be quite a richer experience than the book. But to that end, Britney, you know, is only in her early 40s. She probably doesn't want to like write too much about the conservatorship and like dwell on it, but she knows it's what everybody wants to know about. So I think it was like a good opening lay of the land for Britney. And I feel like this book has so many parts of it that she can expand on should she ever want to do that. But I did feel like it was overall really satisfying, even though it was short. I thought it was one of those like great vacation reads, if you will, where you could just sit down two or three sits and you can just blow right through it. And it's easily written. Like it's easy to read. Like it really, is it a shock that it's like a worldwide bestseller? Like, no, it's like obviously super easy to universally translate. Like she was very smart about the way that she wrote this book.
I completely agree. And I think one thing that you brought up here is that it is universally been a bestseller. And I think it's one of the first books in a really long time where I know everybody's reading it or listening to the audiobook. If you are a millennial, particular like of a certain age, you have picked up this book or this audiobook. And that to me is fascinating, because it is very rare that there is a book that everybody, even people I know who aren't readers, are reading. And that to me is fascinating. And it's a touchstone. It's a testament to the icon she is of our generation and like how important she is. And also just like how many people are in her corner and like how many of us still, you know, support her so much, even after everything she's been through. I really, really came out of that also just like feeling so happy for her that she was out of such a horrible situation, but so sad that, like, she has spent most of her life amongst people she doesn't trust and can't trust because they haven't been good to her. Like, to hear that really the only good people to her in her life were her grandmother and Paris Hilton and Felicia, that to me is and maybe like a handful of others, but really that is so sad. Like we already knew a lot of this, but to really hear it in her own words in this book was just like heartbreaking for me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't want to get too off track because I want to get to the book soon because we just have so much, I'm sure, to talk about. But I was curious if you did see, because this is, you know, dun, 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 like breaking news. Did you hear about what happened to Jamie Spears recently?
Jamie or Jamie Lynn?
No, Jamie, her dad.
No.
He got his leg amputated after an infection.
Oh.
Because if there's one other major takeaway that I got from this book, it's that Jamie Spears 100% deserves jail, in allegedly, don't sue me. But like I firmly believe that he allegedly deserves to go to jail for like the rest of his life because the amount of money that he stole from his daughter. It was so hard to read the conservatorship parts. Like to your point of like her being surrounded by charlatans, her own parents, charlatans.
Oh my God. Can I just say, like, in the pantheon of stage dads, there's like Joe Jackson's the worst. Like he gets, you know, top bit, like, because he's like all the above. And then it's Jamie Spears. Like they're pretty neck and neck though. Like
I would give them a tie for first after all this conservatorship stuff.
This is so, what an piece of shit. And just like to hear that he has been a piece of shit her whole life in some capacity. And like, not to say like, look, addiction is a disease. Like we all need to take that very seriously. Nonetheless, to see like what she went through and to see this man abuse her time and time again from childhood into adulthood after she was his fucking meal ticket for so long. I mean, it is just staggering. And to me, it is, to quote Cher Horowitz, a travesty on the legal system. Like absolutely insane that this shit was allowed to go down. And it's why this has always reminded me, her story of her conservatorship has always reminded me of Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys, because he too dealt with something very similar, albeit not with his father, a psychiatrist, but still very similar.
That's a great similarity to bring up. I completely agree with that. To be betrayed by your family like that, and then everybody wants to act surprised about stuff that she writes on Instagram or the way that she's acting. I can't imagine being controlled like that during truly the most formative time of your life, which is like 26 to 41. You know, that's like really when you find yourself and you really get settled into your career and like what you want. So the idea that her, you know, with all due respect to people who are alcoholics, former alcoholics, but like her alcoholic, failed business father filed for bankruptcy, is controlling her finances in her life, and she only gets a $2,000 a week allowance? Britney Spears?
Millions.
Excuse me?
Millions of records, concert tickets. Like, it is absolutely mind-boggling. And for me, it is just to see the way, yeah, she was forced to live. The way she has come out of this reminds me a lot of when I watch like a documentary around a cult or something, and someone who survives a cult and escapes, and they may live like a little bit of a different lifestyle still. And it's like, well, yeah, if you were under the guise of like mind manipulation, drugs, and all sorts of other things, and you were giving your money to these, like, I get it. Like, I get why these people are. I feel like the mindset has to be similar. Like, you're gaslit into this. Like, she basically survived what people survive when they survive a cult. And in some cases, even worse, because she had to give away millions, millions of dollars that she made. Her own money.
Well, her own money was used against her. It's like sick, you know, like she's paying lawyers to keep her under the thumb of her father with her money. And she can't get her own lawyer because the lawyer that she that was assigned to her is inept, and all he can do is just cash the check. And, you know, people, I think we've said this before when we talked about the New York Times piece that they did on her on framing Britney Spears, of like, it is like truly playing in our faces when some of the villains are named literally Andrew Wallet, and this man is making millions of dollars off of a woman that he is allowing to be abused by a legal system. Like, it, you really, it's like a James Bond villain level thing. But I feel like now we're in the weeds. We're already in the weeds. We're 15, not even 15 minutes in. And we're like, we've already careened into the end of the book, which is mostly the conservatorship. But before we start, you know, go back to the beginning, as Hilary Duff says, are any other like overall thoughts about The Woman in Me?
Just the level of hard work that she put into getting where she is today. Like, I mean, I knew that, we always see it because she is like a fantastic dancer. I already knew she was a theater kid as a small child, but like, just to know, like, you know, where she came from. And I mean, I knew she came from kind of like a small town in Louisiana, but to really know, like, contextually, like, you know, the world that she had experienced when she was thrust into stardom. And like, you know, this is a woman who, probably, you know, I think she even talks about it in this book, like, rode her first airplane as a teen, like, you know, as when she was becoming a famous person, like that kind of thing. It was just, you realize, I knew she had lived a sheltered life. I don't think I had realized just like how sheltered, until she kind of described it in this book, but in weird ways, because she lived a sheltered life in that small town sense, and yet was exposed to so much at such a young age. Like, I don't think the picture that was painted for so long about the childhood she had was very, you know, quite idyllic. And so to hear it in her own words, just like how bad it was and how quickly she had to become an adult, was just very heartbreaking, even before becoming a famous person.
I'd say, like, my last parting thought, though, is it really starts with the title for me. What do you think of The Woman in Me as a title for the book? She does talk about it a lot throughout the book. And I think my problem is we never really get a clear definition of what the woman in her means to her. She just sort of like says it a lot as sort of like, maybe it's like a mantra, or like, yeah, like a mantra, like what you say to yourself, like when you meditate or whatever. But to me, I feel like I kind of think I know what she means. It's very like, not yet a girl, wait, I'm not a girl, not yet a woman, the woman in me, still trying to find the person within me. But I can't help, because it's Britney and I follow her Instagram, I can't help but feel that they're probably, knowing her, is a deeper meaning behind it. And I don't know. I don't know if I love it as a title. It just is sort of one of those, like, you know, say nothing titles, but, you know, what's in a title? But I don't know. What's your perspective? I'm not great at naming shit, so what do I know?
It's not my favorite title, one, because, yeah, I think it's kind of vague. But two, the other thing is it's the title of a very famous Shania Twain album. So that's what I kept thinking of when I saw The Woman in Me. Like, that was immediately where I went to, was, you know, Shania Twain, whose bed have your boots been under? But, yeah, I think, like, it's hard to title things. And maybe for her, you know, like, to your point, Britney always has a lot of double meanings and things that she says on her Instagram captions. And so I think in this case, that might have been that. And it's something she just didn't really do a great job explaining as a part of this book.
Well, she talks a lot, especially when we get to the conservatorship part, talks a lot about how, you know, she was supposed to be a woman and supposed to be this adult, but they treated her like a child. So she regressed into being a child and rebelling against things that her dad asked her to do, like, you know, like the Cosmopolitan, or the her second Vegas residency that she just like walked off. And I think it's also kind of evident in the way, like, in her social media behavior that, yeah, I don't know, she's rediscovering herself after, you know, not being able to be in touch with herself for 13 years. So I think that's like sort of what she's getting at, since she, again, brings it up quite frequently that she doesn't feel like her age, and she doesn't really know what that what that means as a part of her life since she hasn't been able to be her own person for so long. So, yeah, I just kind of thought there would be like a chapter about like the woman in me and what that means to me. But I honestly, my very first flag is the Aya Foch's line, because, you know, some of the setup to her book, some of it is sad. Most of it we already know, like, you know, the star search to Mickey Mouse Broadway pipeline that landed her at Jive. But just like in the broad strokes, I think what's most interesting about obviously her background and her family and how she grew up was learning the extremely scary parallel between Brittany and her grandmother, who she shares a name with, Jean, and how her father, Jamie, learned that when women get quote unquote difficult or get out of line or whatever, you ship them off to a mental health institution and you put them on lithium and get them to fucking behave. And seeing that line, that direct line between Brittany's grandmother and grandmother and grandfather on her father's side, how her father was abused growing up by his father and how he's passed down that trauma so generously to Brittany in the form of this conservatorship, because now the stakes are even higher than they were when Jamie was growing up, was extremely disturbing to learn.
Yeah, the parallels were, one, terrifying. Two, you know, you just made me pause for a second because we were talking about the title, The Woman in Me. I almost wonder, it's like weird because it's woman singular, but I almost wonder if there's a bit like the women in me and one of them being her grandmother is like who she's talking about here. That, you know, sharing the namesake, but also sharing that lineage and maybe sharing, you know, that's now that same story in many ways. And just her having somewhat of a level of empathy early on about her dad and the abuse that he endured, like that, I give her like credit for having that grace given everything she endured. I mean, for me, just seeing those parallels with the grandmother was so jarring and like so sad to almost see, you know, your destiny early on in life without even knowing.
Yeah, that's so creepy. And, you know, her grandmother on her mother's side, that was, you know, a little bit more of like a heartwarming tale and kind of gave a little bit of insight as to why sometimes Brittany would like slip into a British accent. It was because her mother's side of the family is British, which was a really interesting thing to kind of like connect. That I feel like that she left a lot of interesting and fun breadcrumbs where if you are a Britney fan, you can kind of like piece them together in your own little, like make your own adventure into Britney Spears land, which I really liked. And I appreciated the dichotomy between the light and dark contrast of grandmothers. And it was nice that she inherited something fun from her British grandmother, which is, you know, imitating her accent. But back to our man, Jamie. There's lots of talk, especially in the beginning, about him being drunk, losing his job, going bankrupt. We meet a lot of other family members like her Aunt Sandra, who comes into play much later on, contributing to, like, you know, Britney's infamous life in 2007 was a huge contribution to her spiral, was her Aunt Sandra passing away and how close she was with her and was basically like raised with her whole life. Is there anything in the Mickey Mouse Club or anything along the lines leading up to Britney's, like, you know, Hit Me Baby One More Time that you want to get more into? Or do you want to get into that? Or what am I missing? Any other family stuff?
I guess, yeah, just realizing how intertwined her life was early on, not just – so Mickey Mouse Club, we know all the other famous players, right? We knew Justin Timberlake. We knew Christina Aguilera and J.C. Chassez and Carrie Russell and Ryan Gosling. But knowing that even in her Broadway days, not only was Natalie Portman the other understudy for her role in Ruthless off Broadway, but they were both understudies for Laura Bell Bundy, who is now a very famous Tony Award winning actress. She was Elle Woods in the Legally Blonde musical and has gone on to be, you know, a bunch of very famous roles, originate a lot of famous roles on Broadway. So that to see early on her brushes with other soon-to-be stars at a young age, not just in the Mickey Mouse circuit, but also the off-Broadway circuit, was really fascinating to see and hear. And it's interesting to see how you know, these people come into her life.
She had a lot of actually really good, like, celeb stories, and this is a wonderful intro to the other part of the page that I highlighted that's opposite of the faux shiz quote, which we obviously can get to because it's hysterical, and I want to spend 100 years talking about it. So this is how she describes meeting Mariah Carey at an award show. I just highlighted the section that's the most fun. You know how we all have ring lights now? Well, more than 20 years ago, only Mariah Carey knew about ring lights. And no, I can't say just her first name. To me, she is always going to be Mariah Carey. I did everything Mariah Carey told me to do, and we took the photo. Of course, she was completely right about everything. The photo looked incredible. I know I won an award that night, but I couldn't even tell you what it was. The perfect photo with Mariah Carey, that was the real prize. And she gets starstruck all throughout this book. Like, she talks about seeing Lenny Kravitz and being starstruck. She talks about being starstruck by Carrie Russell when they were just kids. It's really fun to hear her make these, like, little comments. And it's comments like that that really reassure me that Brittany obviously wrote this book. There are things that, in the way that she says them, that only Brittany can say those. Only Brittany can put the sentence together. It's like, it's almost like a Jenna from 30 Rock. Like, this is a sentence only Jenna could ever think of. And that's how I feel about Brittany. I'd say in this section where she's talking about the success about Hit Me Baby and the recording of her first album, I don't know. We didn't really get, even throughout the only album she really kind of goes into some detail about recording it is mostly Blackout, and then followed a little bit by Glory, only in regards really to like her kids and also feeling like she finally enjoyed making music again. But nothing else, nothing really about like the debut album, or like not as much. She had like a couple lines about the music video, but it goes, you could tell, at least at this point in her life, in reflecting and looking back, it wasn't more important. Like, the biggest part of her life was not necessarily the album taking off. It was Justin Timberlake and her relationship with him.
You bring up a point in my, like, that maybe it's not my, maybe not a complaint about this book, but that one thing that I do think about this book, which is, yeah, Brittany is going to spend the time she wants to spend on the things that really matter to her at this point. And to your point, it is really only the Blackout album that gets a lot of focal or a lot of time in this book. And then really, when it comes to Baby One More Time, it's strictly the song Baby One More Time in the music video. She does spend some time talking about her first meeting with Max Martin, but yeah, it is like, to your point, the albums are all kind of an afterthought. A lot more time is spent on this kind of the starstruck feeling she experienced and her performances. She does spend a lot of time talking about her tours and her choreography and performances, which was interesting. And then Crossroads comes in at a small point, but yeah, it is very much like Brittany went in with this, like, I'm going to only focus on, you know, things that have brought me joy outside, because I know I'm going to have to talk about this conservatorship and the things that did not bring me joy during these parts of my life.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back on any, like, she talks, to your point about like the record stuff or about like the various records that she's recorded, because she has like a very large discography. They're just like, I wouldn't say throwaway sentences, but they're just like too short. Like, she talks about how she really had to push to get Madonna to be on a single with her, and that the label didn't think it was going to work. And then it like ended up doing gangbusters, and it was just another instance of her being like ahead of her time.
Oh, another thing, sorry, that I, before we forget, because we're talking about Madonna and Me Against the Music, which is going to also go into like the Kiss at the MTV Awards. I didn't realize she and Christina were on such like not great terms. I mean, not great terms, I guess, but she didn't have very great things to say about Christina Aguilera, which was interesting because I remember calling this out a couple of years ago, not calling it out, but acknowledging that like Christina was one of the few people who from her past life who had supported her during all the troubles that she was facing when they were coming to light on social media. And in hindsight, I'm realizing maybe I mean, it was always going to be a little performative, but like maybe it was more performative than I had thought. So that was interesting to me.
I kind of had like a little bit of a different read on that, though. Like, I really kind of felt like, in my perspective, not maybe it wasn't always like kind or something, but there was definitely a point in the book later on where Brittany says that she saw Christina at a party and she seemed messed up and something like that. And she like couldn't believe that she was like that in public. But I felt like that was more like she wished that she could be like that, but that her life was so, I think it kind of fed into the like, oh, people are like partying and having fun without me, not necessarily like a dig on Christina, although I could see it going that way. I don't know. I think, I don't know if she necessarily holds a grudge. I don't think either of them really do. I think they can both appreciate and understand that they've been through it, you know, trademark, and that they were both child stars and that they both didn't have it easy for different reasons.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And so I don't think that, I think that if Brittany has any ill will, but like if she has any type of feelings about Christina that are negative, I think she'll eventually let it go and come around on that, because I do believe that they have such a huge shared experience. It'd be really silly to hang on to any of that stuff. But I do understand when you're like going through it and processing a lot of trauma, you can kind of assign blame to the wrong person that with some perspective you can appreciate had nothing to do with the situation.
I can see that for sure.
But yeah, I would say like, you know, the half a shoe that's missing for me of this book was like kind of a little bit more into the records and like the making of. And to your point about the tours, though, I feel like she spends a lot of time talking about how much she fucking hates being on tour. I mean, and how much she also didn't really like love her residency. Like towards the end, obviously, she was like happy to be done. And I understand her frustration about why she didn't like the residency. Like not being able to change the playlist sounds really fucking annoying. Not being able to do new remixes. Feeling like your fans aren't getting the best possible show. Like I can, from a perfectionist point of view and a hard worker's point of view, I totally understand where she's coming from. But as a fan that saw it, I wouldn't know the difference. You know, it was like the only time that I got to go see her perform, and I was just so happy. And I thought she was amazing, and she was a great dancer and had wonderful choreography and just great stage presence. But also it was the end of it, so maybe she was more excited knowing that it was going to end soon. But what she really liked about Vegas is not that it wasn't a grind like tour was. Like it was still a grind, but at least it wasn't like going city to city. It wasn't like as involved. It didn't feel as grueling as a regular tour does.
I think the other thing that I'm recognizing from this book is just how little of a say she had. I knew early on in her career, she didn't have a say in a lot, as most pop stars don't. Like they are controlled by a machine and a label. But to realize that Blackout may in fact be one, and maybe like the Onyx Hotel might be the only times where she, like that tour might be the only times where she had full control of her career, is pretty fascinating, because it's bookended. Her career as a performer is pretty much bookended by being controlled, starting with being controlled by a label and then later being controlled by her own father. Like that to me in itself is fascinating, to think about having a 20-year career that has been 90% of the time controlled by one person or one group of people.
I mean, it shouldn't be that surprising. I mean, I know that she's, you know, not Taylor Swift and she's not telling us a story in all of her songs about her personal life, but so much of her music is about control, having too much, wanting to be her own person. especially when you think about her later albums like In the Zone and what's Slave for You?
Britney.
Yeah, Britney. There are a couple of songs where she talks about being overprotected and not having enough control in her career. And so that's always been a theme in her music regardless. And so now we kind of have a better insight into why exactly she was saying that necessarily, and that it wasn't because her demographic felt that way about their own lives. Like, it was actually really happening in her life. So it was a little bit more of an autobiographical situation than it was not. But I mean, I wonder how much she want. I mean, hopefully she wanted to talk about Blackout because she really does enjoy it. I do wonder if it was perhaps a ghostwriter's suggestion that she incorporate something about her, something about the making of one of her favorite albums. Who cares which one? Just pick one. And maybe she picked Blackout. But I was just really curious. I would be curious to know what made her pick Blackout, other than it seems like she was really proud of it. And it was obviously like the last best thing that she got to have for herself before she became controlled by her father.
Yeah. No other points to that. I agree.
Should we move on to like the Justin section?
Yes.
Okay. In that spirit, I'm going to read this now famous quote. One day, Jay and I were in New York going to parts of town I'd never been to before. Walking our way was a guy with a huge blinged out medallion. He was flanked by two giant security guards. Jay got all excited and said so loud, "Oh yeah, foshes, foshes, Genuine, what's up, homie?" After Genuine walked away, Felicia did an impression of Jay. "Oh yeah, foshes, foshes, Genuine." I can't even imagine a more apt quote to describe what a fucking loser Justin Timberlake is than that right there, my friends. And to be honest, that's probably the only time he doesn't come across as a total fucking asshole. It's like everything after this, that she, the way that she talks about him, he sucks.
He sucks. Two, I don't get to use the word doofus often, so I get to use it today. What a doofus. Three, when we get more into this Justin Timberlake portion, I can't wait to speculate with you who we think the mystery woman was.
How did you know that that was the next Justin tab that I had? If we had like a bingo card, you would have already been there.
I'm glad that I'm picking up your vibes all the way from the other side of the room.
Yeah, because, you know, they blew up at the same time. Maybe she was a little bit more popular than him. She doesn't really necessarily examine that. But what we do know is that Justin cheated a fuck ton, apparently, straight from Britney. She said, there were a couple of times during our relationship when I knew Justin had cheated on me, especially because I was so infatuated and in love. So I let it go, even though the tabloids seemed determined to rub it in my face. When NSYNC went to London in 2000, photographers caught him with one of the girls from All Saints in a car, but I never said anything. At that time, we'd been together for a year. And now, the highlighted portion. That was just stage setting. Another time, we were in Vegas, and one of my dancers who'd been hanging out with him told me he gestured towards a girl and said, "Yeah, man, I hit that last night." I don't want to say who he was talking about because she's actually very popular and married with kids now. I don't want her to feel bad. Okay. Who do you think it is? I have one guess that doesn't feel good, but it might be right.
I think I know who you're going to guess.
Okay, on three. One, two, three. Mandy Moore.
Mandy Moore.
Sorry, Mandy. We still love you, but, you know.
She dated a lot of older men than her at that time. And when I say older, I mean like, because she was probably only 18, 19 years old, because she's younger than the rest of the pop stars. And so she's born in 84. Like, I think she's turning 40 next year. So back then, you know, she dated Wilmer Valderrama when she was pretty, you know, still underage, I think, and dated Zach Braff a few years later. So like, it wouldn't surprise me.
Oh, no, it wouldn't surprise me either. I've done all of the Reddit thread digging that you could possibly do to try to figure it out. And it really does sound the most aligned time and place. And clearly, Britney is not mad at her. But I do understand how if she named her, it would be not amazing for her social media mentions. especially after Mandy caught like some heat recently because she was like kind of a dick about like the SAG strike and like dressing up for Halloween. And so people were like, okay, just calm down. It's just Halloween. But so I don't know if she could have afforded to catch any more strays at that point.
Not to mention she dealt with her own toxic relationship sure. with Ryan Adams. So like at this point, like clearly Brittany knows that she's been through it.
It's not gonna help anything. And I guess the only other thing to discuss about their relationship is what's been discussed probably the most out of this book, which is that she reveals that her and Justin got pregnant and he asked her essentially to have an abortion because he was not ready to become a father. And I don't know if we necessarily need to examine that more than it's already been discussed, but I think it being a huge contributing factor to their breakup was very interesting. Although she does talk about how she cheated on Justin one time because she felt entitled to doing that after he had cheated on her whole bunch with Wade Robson. And this is another thing where it was like an underbaked story that I feel like we're not getting everything and that she doesn't want. I think she's maybe too close and is kind of wrapped up at this point in the narrative of like she doesn't want anybody to think she's ever done anything wrong or that she feels like people pick apart what she says and she just can't deal with it. And that's totally fair. But I feel like we're missing some details to the Wade Robson story? Like, yeah, I really do. And I genuinely wish she would have at least acknowledged that dance battle situation that allegedly happened in a club in the 2000s.
I mean, again, someone else who maybe she also just didn't want to drag him into anything anymore because, you know.
Right. He's definitely going through it. So yes. He's got his own problems. And so maybe she was just being gracious. But yeah, I think the toll and the unprocessed trauma of her breakup with Justin, you know, is one of those things that obviously we can guess at, but now have like full confirmation of how bad of a place it left her in mentally and kind of like left her in this sort of emotional red, like in the red emotionally that she never really quite got back to the center of because people just, and this is a theme for like her whole life, is just like get her ass back to work, like get her on whatever she needs to be on, get her ass back on the stage and get her making money. Like, and whether it's that regard for her mental health and like personal well-being, whether that disregard comes from like a record label, her father. But I think the message is still clear to Brittany, which is like, you don't matter. All that matters is how much money you can make us. And we don't really care about anything else.
Yeah. Ultimately, I mean, the men, she's very seldom had a good man in her life at any stage in the like familial sense or the relationship sense. I mean, to see her go from, you know, Justin Timberlake in a breakup that left her pretty devastated and had long lasting impacts to then moving on to Kevin Federline, who is a piece of shit, to, you know, then having to move on to a slew of other kind of not so great men sometimes. And then later to have to ultimately be controlled by her own father. Like, it's just, it's really, I cannot imagine what it must feel like to feel like almost every man who's ever been a part of your life has been untrustworthy.
Well, that's an unintentional, amazing segue to what I want to talk about next, which is
the hits keep coming.
Yeah. Not only could she trust no man, she could trust no woman, especially her mom or her sister, because one thing I appreciate about Brittany's book is that she does not hold back about what she feels and thinks about every single member of her family. The way that she just gives a little bop bop to her sister at any fucking chance, which I think is hilarious and great and like fuck Jamie Lynn, etc. But the way that she does it really takes me out. The first highlight that I have for Jamie Lynn that really crushed me because I was like, damn, you didn't have to do that. She's talking about her mom getting divorced from her dad and, you know, how she was self-medicating and couldn't get off the couch and her dad was like MIA, and then she just comes at her sister in the funniest way. And my little sister's quote from the book, and my little sister, well, when I tell you she was a total bitch, I'm not exaggerating.
I think for me, the Jamie Lynn of it all that was shocking is to know that not only, I mean, she's always been a jerk, like as an adult, but to know that she has always been an ingrate is like just incredible. I mean, talk about writing on the coattails of your sister. Like, it is just to know how spoiled and how awful she was even as a child is just like, Jesus. And then the other thing I want to bring up is the Lynn Spears of it all, because this is a woman who made a career out of her identity as Britney Spears' mom. I don't know if you remember this, but Lynn released a book in the early 2000s that my sister owned and like we both read.
Emily, all of my facial expressions are because you are setting me up perfectly to read a passage about Lynn that has everything to do about what you are saying. So thank you. Because I thought all of these passages, I thought all of these passages were is so telling, and it really drives home the point, because if you ever want to quote unquote read Lynn Spears's book without actually reading it, go to Chelsea Devantes of Celebrity Memoir Book Podcast. Go to her Instagram. In her highlights, she sometimes will story a book that she's reading for the podcast and make her little make her comments in there, and then screenshot passages and you can read them. And she has one for Lynn Spears' book, and oh my God, like I don't want to ever read the whole thing. And I thank her for her service. She is an incredibly kind person on the internet, but she knew that the people needed to see what a horrendous, disgusting person Lynn Spears was at her daughter's lowest point. So this is the paragraph that this really took me out. There are two parts, but we'll start here. My mother was telling Meredith Vieira on the Today Show that she'd spent hours wondering how things went so wrong with me. On another show, the audience clapped when she said my sister was pregnant at 16. That was classy as shit, apparently, because she was still with the father. Yes, how wonderful. She was married to her husband and having a baby at 17. They're still together. Great. It doesn't matter that she's a child having a child. I swear to God, it makes me want to cry to think about my kids going through anything hard like I was going through when they were babies. The last thing I would do would be to cut my hair into a bob and put on a tasteful pantsuit and sit down on a morning show set across from Meredith fucking Vieira and make money off my child's misfortune. That paragraph truly stayed with me. I mean, it not only is it funny, but it perfectly encapsulates her rage and exactly why any normal person would be full of rage if this happened to them.
I am so weary out of any celebrity's parent who makes their career out of being that person's parent and their identity and has a whole thing around it moving forward. Because Lynn Spears is not the first and certainly won't be the last. But just to see that hypocrisy play out the way it did and just to realize how different it was, because I really hope there was some glimmer of hope with the mom. But no, she in some ways, I think she might be even worse. No, that's not true, because Jamie Spears is a piece of shit. But like to see the hypocrisy play out the way it did was just like staggering.
No, I don't know. I wonder if she might be worse, because that reminded me of a quote that she talks about later on, because her parents do get back together in 2010, 8 years after their divorce. And she felt really betrayed by the state of California at this point. And she goes on to say, my mom seemed to love that because of the conservatorship, my dad now had a real job. They watched Criminal Minds on the couch every fucking night. Who does that? I don't know.
Yeah, who does that, Joe Montana? Yeah?
But also, there was a point in time where Sean and I definitely watched Criminal Minds every night. You know what I mean? I mean, I never like forced.
You gotta see the groomer.
I never forced anybody to like perform against their will or anything. But yeah, that was just because the cable in my like shitty post-college house, like, we only got basic cable, and that was what was on ION. So that was what we were watching at night. But yeah, she has nothing nice to say about either of them, but I thought that quote was super funny. But, you know, let's see. Let's go to Kevin, because I think Kevin is a fun place to go, because he fucking sucks and was clearly much thirstier for the fame than perhaps we had even suspected. Because some of, you know, you and I obviously watched Chaotic, Kevin and Britney, and it seemed more like her idea, but it seemed like perhaps it was maybe his idea to sort of soft launch himself. Because as she goes on to say at one point about Kevin, he really thought he was a rapper now, bless his heart, because he did take it so seriously.
I think that to me is the whole, yeah, I knew K-Fed kind of took himself seriously. I don't think to that extent. I feel like the way she talked about it in this book, he didn't realize this was like 15 minutes of fame. And that to me is probably the most fascinating thing. I was so happy to get to hear Popo Zhao again.
Oh my God. So I was
so long.
First of all, yeah. Oh my God. We should add that to the playlist. A couple of years ago, it got stuck in my head for some reason, and I then had to share it with Sean, and then it got stuck in both of our heads. And that now leads me to my next point, which is I was trying to find the point in this book where she drags Kevin and that song. So he's like, she says something to the effect of like, Popo Zhao, it's Brazilian for big ass. That was when he was rapping about like real nice. But really, she just comes for Kevin because she says that he was really enthralled with fame and power, and that some celebrities handle fame really well because they have perspective, but that she didn't, and that Kevin also just seemed to really love it for the sake of really loving it. But I think her Kevin era, because of like the kids and stuff, there's just like this part where she talks about her house with Kevin. She says, Kevin and I built an incredible house in Los Angeles right beside Mel Gibson's house. Gross. Sandy from Greece lived nearby too. I'd see her out and I'd call out, hi, Olivia Newton-John. How are you, Olivia Newton-John? Which is very like, hi, Barbie. Hi, Barbie.
But I can also see Brittany doing that because she was probably obsessed with Grease as a child, which I love.
Look, if she's calling Mariah Carey to her face, like she's calling Olivia Newton-John to her face. You know what I mean? But I thought this was super funny because this was like kind of a glimpse into Brittany's mindset when she finally got a taste of like being able to like spend her own money and stuff. I didn't like the wooden floor, so I added marble everywhere. And of course, it had to be white marble. The interior designer was completely against it. He said, quote, marble floors are super slippery and it's hard if you fall down. I want marble, I shouted. I need marble. It was my home and my nest. And it was fucking beautiful. But I think that's when I knew that I became weird.
I do love that there's a very Dolly Parton side to her where she's like, this is my taste. It may look cheap and that's okay. That's me. Like she talks about her dressing and she even says like, I know I'm not the best dresser in this book. And there is something about her in that sense, which I just love, which is that she is so unapologetically herself. And I can really appreciate after everything she endured, she's still fucking Britney, bitch.
Well, I finally found that passage that I told you about. Los Angeles is warm and sunny all year round. Driving through the city, sometimes it's hard to remember what season it is. Everywhere you look, people are wearing sunglasses and drinking cold drinks out of straws, smiling and laughing underneath a clear blue sky. I don't know why that passage got me so good, but I truly had to make everybody at dinner read it. I was like, please, it's poetry. You don't understand.
I mean, Haim has never described Los Angeles as vividly. Randy Newman, who? Like, come on.
She's still got it, baby. Well, you know, to bring it back to the beginning and the title of The Woman in Me, you know, maybe I was wrong. You know, I can admit when I was wrong because I think maybe The Woman in Me kind of, I found something that I had bookmarked earlier that I think is maybe like the whole thesis of the book. Brittany so poignantly says at one point, at what point did I promise to stay 17 for the rest of my life? Which I think is like a huge, I mean, I think that's just like an underlying issue for any woman at any point in their life. And not to mention a giant superstar who has been famous since she was a child. There is this sort of pressure to be this ingenue for forever. And it really is I hope Britney has seen Barbie because it's truly that America Ferrera speech in so many ways. But I just feel like that is maybe kind of like touches on what we've been saying all along in regards to like the title of the book. Like maybe it's like the many women that are in her that make her up, sort of like Betty Gilpin's All of the Women in My Brain. Like it's just a different way of saying it.
That 17 line hits me on so many different levels because it is the like, you know, who you are going to be in your career. You can't always be the ingenue. Like, there's no, it doesn't make sense after you leave, you know, the age of 17. But it also harkens back to like her father and the control he has over her as an adult, as if she is a teenager again. And it's like so interesting because that line just resonates on so many levels in this book.
Totally. That's the thesis for her whole career is, at what point did she promise to stay 17 forever for all of you? And why? And I think that's a really interesting thing to examine. And perhaps she is going to write a second book. She did say that. And I think it's been number one for like weeks and weeks and weeks. And I think that that's incredible that she's had such a great success with the book. And I wonder if it will warrant another volume of Britney stories, even if it's just like another collection of stories of from her childhood through her career. I'd be happy with that as well. But I really enjoyed the book, even if it's missing, you know, half a Jessica Simpson collection shoe, because I think it's refreshing to read it in her own words. Even though there were things that we wanted her to expand on, I never got the impression or felt like she was holding anything back in any sort of way at all. And, you know, I read a couple of celeb memoirs this year, and the one that I was the most let down by, like, no offense, is Paris Hilton's. I felt like you could feel her holding back on every page, and she had such a need to spin everything into a positive and to girl boss it away and to sliving it away and to turn it into branding. And sometimes you don't have to do that. I mean, you can, and I think that that's great, but I really appreciate that Britney's just like, no, this fucking sucks, and I don't even know what to do with it anymore, because I was the one thing that used to give me joy and passion and I loved, just singing and dancing, is been completely stripped away of any of that for me now. And I don't know where I go from here. And I'm still processing all of this stuff. And I think that in so many ways, maybe Paris Hilton's next book will be better when she's older and has more perspective and feels like she can say more things. I feel like Britney's next book will be more in depth and have more stories to it as well. But she doesn't hold back at all. And I think that for that, it made it a really notable read. And you totally get why everybody is reading it. It's like popcorn. Like, I know this is like her real life, but it's like the perfect vacation one sit read. Like, you just blow through it because she has led a one of a kind life.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I'd also add that I am happy to see it end on the note of her releasing the single with Elton John and like having that you know, kind of be this like the end for now, in terms of her career. I do, but yeah, to your point, it never feels like she's holding anything back, and it would make the book a much better book if it were in there. You know what I mean? Like, it, that would be nice, but it's not like it wouldn't make or break the book. It is well edited for being this kind of shorter memoir. And yeah, I just appreciate that it stayed true to her voice and the way she speaks and the way she writes on Instagram, because I think it would feel very jarring for it to not be that way. So I appreciated it for that.
Yeah, I mean, even there's a passage in here that I couldn't find again that I didn't highlight the first time, about how she knows that she has bad style and that she's trying to work on it and she wants to be better. But you can see, like, in the spread that was in People to promote the book, like the week before it came out, it was like her own dress and her own photography. And you can really, and she talks about it a little bit in the book about how, like, she really enjoys Instagram because it's the first time she's ever had control of her own image, which is such a haunting thing to sit and think about, especially in the age of people protecting their kids' identities online so that they can choose how they want to be perceived. The idea that it took her 40 some odd years to have control over her own image, like, maybe now we can all have a little bit more empathy and just like leave her alone and let her do her little knife dances and let her do her whatever she wants. I mean, like, one of her last Instagram dance videos where she's like dancing on a pole, but then like her assistant's like in the background, like doing work, is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And we should just let Britney live. You know, we've freed her, now let her live.
Couldn't agree more. At this point, let her have her fun. Let her show her midriff off at whatever age. Like, let her do her own thing. At this point, like, there are people doing far worse things in the world than putting out fun little videos on Instagram.
Okay. Well, I think we have thoroughly examined the woman in me, the woman in you, and the woman in Britney Spears. And it was a great ride. I'm really glad that we read this book together. I'm glad that we recapped it for the podcast. I hope everybody listening enjoyed this episode. If you did, it'd be super cool if you could rate us 5 stars if the whatever platform you are listening to this on gives you that ability. If you enjoyed this episode, also make sure you follow us on wherever you listen to this podcast. If you are so inclined, you can also give us a follow on social media. We are at The Old Millennials Pod on Instagram and Facebook. And we will be back with another episode this week. And until then, we say bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.